Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
Welcome to Encounter on ABC Radio National. I'm David Bush. Today, a journey to Australia and a life behind locked doors.
Federal Agent Mollick is going to take over now, OK, Crystal?
I'm from the task force investigating people trafficking, and this is Agent Ellis. This is an interview between Federal Agent Mollicker and a person presently known to me as Crystal.
This is Lee
Yeung.
She's pretty.
She can maybe prostitute. Please, you help find her.
Why do you?
Yeah, your name. Can you say your name?
Crystal.
Lynn buy me a drink in a hotel.
Hello.
She told me I have a dancer.
Hello.
Make big money.
Hello.
Just as people were feeling good about the 200th anniversary of the end of Britain's Transatlantic Slave Trade Act, achieved through the efforts of William Wilberforce, among others, and told in the movie Amazing Grace, along came an Australian film, The Jammed. Shot in Melbourne and based on actual court documents, it's put a fresh spotlight on the trafficking of young women into Australia as sex slaves. But while the sordid world and desperate circumstances depicted in the movie may be a confronting eye-opener for many Australians, it's familiar territory to a growing network of religious orders and church groups. Alongside other community agencies, they're on the front line of addressing the Australian and Asia-Pacific dimensions of the huge global phenomenon of human trafficking.
It's mostly the vulnerable, the women and the children, who are used as objects with no thought to their being images of God. And I think that's very dear to the heart of any person who's lived in religious life, that we work against any denigration of the value and the intrinsic dignity of the human being. And saying that you can't do this to people, you cannot just treat people as a commodity. No one can be bought and sold.
Pauline Cole of Brisbane is a Good Samaritan sister. She coordinates Australian Catholic Religious Against Trafficking of Humans, ACRAF, a large national network of Catholic religious orders dedicated to anti-trafficking. A range of catalysts over recent years have galvanised the religious orders on this issue. In 2001 and 2004, the international leaders of 800 congregations of Catholic women religious declared the trafficking of women to be a global priority issue for their 1 million members, and orders worldwide began to mobilise. But groups in Australia were having their own encounters.
We, as Brigidine Sisters, have an asylum seekers project. Mainly we minister to young men. And both in Melbourne and in Sydney, we became aware that when visiting the detention centres, there were small groups of women arriving. They would be in the detention centre when you visited 1 week and maybe gone in a week or 10 days. And we started to ask questions with some of the lads that we were visiting. And it appears that they were picked up in raids. They appeared to be extremely cautious and untrusting and were young. Given the facts from some of the men talking with us, that's how we discovered that they had been brought into the country against their will.
Louise Cleary of Melbourne has just completed a term as world leader of the Brigidine Sisters. She was one of the founders of ACRAF.
And a small group of us initiated meetings initially in Sydney. We were overwhelmed with the numbers who came, and that subsequently led to 12 congregations saying that they would be committed to pursuing this in some way and supporting some counter-trafficking work. Not quite sure how that might be done, but to begin working in the area. Those meetings and communications amongst congregations led to the formation of Australian Catholic Religious Against Trafficking in Humans. And that group has grown now to about 40 religious congregations in Australia being committed to the work.
Trying to understand the issue has made us locally look at our experience of it. And I think in a number of areas where the Salvation Army's been working, we've become aware that we've most probably been dealing with people who've been trafficked, but a lack of internal awareness or reticence of the people involved to put forward that's where who they are has mostly made it difficult for us to meet up with that. So I think internally there's a lot more awareness, and we are seeing within our own services, our street outreach services and some of our accommodation services, certainly people who fit in that category.
Commander Paul Moles of Sydney oversees the Salvation Army street outreach programs. Internationally, the Salvos have declared trafficking a high priority concern, and in Australia it's starting to take a leading role.
In almost every capital city, the Salvation Army is running street-based outreach programs, and I think there is a new understanding that some of the people that we meet, and we're talking to girls standing on street corners, we're talking to prostitutes, and I think we're starting to realise that some of those people are in fact trafficked people. And we had an example of this recently in Sydney, where over a period of time we were communicating with a girl working on one of the corners in the back streets of the Cross, whose knowledge of the English language was limited, and who over time was trying to communicate to us, we are now aware, that in fact she was being coercively held in the work that she was doing. And we tried to become very more intentional about trying to help her find a way out. And in fact that led us into a fairly risky situation with the people who were controlling her, where in fact on one occasion one of our outreach workers was approached by someone obviously who was looking out for this girl on the streets, and he pulled his jacket open and revealed a gun, and although he never pulled it on the person, was certainly making a clear intention, you stay away from our property. Now, the tragedy of that story is that in the next week, that girl disappeared off the streets of Sydney, and we have since had a contact from her because we were able to give her our card, and now she's made contact with us in her stuttery English from another Australian city. And again, she indicated to us then that she'd been moved to another place. She was in a very, very difficult situation and asking someone to contact her within that city.
The story of a young Thai girl sold into sexual slavery in Australia has jolted the public conscience. Aged 27, Pyongtong Simapli died on an observation bed in the Villawood Immigration Detention Centre after vomiting into a bucket over 65 hours.
The Human Rights and Equal Opportunities Commission's comments on the death of Pyongtong Simapli were strong.
Daryl Williams has rejected opposition calls for an inquiry into the sex slave trade in Australia. He's told PM...
It was the death of a 27-year-old Thai prostitute at one of our immigration detention centres that alerted most Australians to an unpalatable truth. The trafficking in sex slaves was happening here.
The question for us now, I suppose, is making sure we can take our good intentions and make them work so that women are not in the same situation that Pyongtong Simapli was and so many other women have been.
When Pyongtong Simapli died in the detention centre in Villawood, the whole issue of human trafficking developed a real human face for me, and the fact that it happened in Australia was quite shocking for me. We were distributing kits on human trafficking, but I think it was that death in Australia that really turned things around for us.
Christine Carolyn is a lay partner with the Good Shepherd Sisters in Melbourne. She heads their social justice office, which includes a substantial focus on trafficking. Pyongtong Simapli died in Villawood in 2001.
I was in contact with Kathleen Maltzahn from Project Respect, and Kathleen and a terrific committee of management organised a memorial service to walk around the streets of Melbourne and to pause, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 times, and to just really stand with Pyongtong Simapli and to think about her life in Thailand, her coming to Australia, her circumstances of her trafficking, and then of her death in Villawood Detention Centre. And quite a crowd of people came. We wore white, and it was a very moving thing standing with a real human being who had been trafficked into Australia. As Good Shepherd, we've always had a brief to stand with women on the margins of society. And so we decided that we really needed to focus a lot more on the issue of human trafficking.
Christine Carolyn and the Good Shepherds in Melbourne helped fund the first major research into human trafficking in Australia, published in March 2004. Human trafficking involves the moving of people by coercion or deception for the purpose of being exploited, for their labour, their bodies or their organs. While it's hard to quantify, International authorities estimate that about 2.5 million people are currently in forced labour as a result of trafficking. Trafficking in human beings ranks as the second most lucrative illicit global industry, worth over $30 billion a year, just under drugs and ahead of arms. For Australia, estimates range from under 100 to over 1,000 trafficked persons here at any one time. It takes many forms, but it involves mostly Asian and Eastern European girls and women being trafficked here into prostitution.
There's a variety of ways they've come. There are women who may have come with the intention of coming in on a visitor or a tourist visa, for example, and they know that they want to work in the sex industry, but never dreamed that they would be put in such an exploitative situation. Their passports taken from them, they're herded from brothel to brothel with no freedom and forced to work 7 days a week non-stop until they have worked off an apparent debt. Some may have come here with the idea that they were going to get a job in a restaurant and truly believe that that is what they were going to do. For many, it was an enormous shock to be forced into a brothel within days and told that they had several hundred clients with whom they would have to have sex with no payment, while their traffickers make the profit and these women are exploited to the extreme against their will.
Louise Reeves is a Sister of St Joseph and immigration lawyer. She volunteers full-time at the Anti-Slavery Project in the Law Faculty of the University of Technology, Sydney. Her large caseload is mostly trafficked women.
And these are the ones we're seeing, the ones who were put into it in an exploitative situation against their will. They may have been abused physically, verbally, psychologically, and under duress and coercion. Sometimes they are forced into it through the fact that the traffickers know their families and that the traffickers have threatened them and said, if you do not comply, we will harm your family. This makes the women fearful. They can be even blackmailed. They can be photographed in compromising situations. For many of these women, even if they do hope to go back one day, they would be afraid that they may be re-trafficked. They may be afraid that photos that have been taken of them will be shown to their families, who may not be aware that this is what has happened to this young woman in this country. They may have sent a message to their family, if they've kept in contact, that they have a different kind of job altogether. So the coercion, the debts, the violence, they have poor English, they have no understanding of our legal system, they may have developed drink and drugs problems. A variety of circumstances may lead them to our door. There's the situation where the woman has, let's say, been caught in a raid in a brothel. There's the situation where the woman may have been referred to us through another client that we may be assisting at the time, and they're brought along knowing that they can get this free legal advice and some assistance and support. They might be referred to us through an agency. Others may have just come in after having been in a brothel situation for a long time, have come out of it, are trying to regularise their immigration status and try and make a future. Some of them have escaped from it, literally escaped from it. Or sometimes just a woman rolls up to the office, comes in, sits there with tears rolling down her cheeks. She's literally been in a desperate situation. She listens to her options and she might disappear. She may not come back.
Legal options open to trafficked women are few. Protection and spouse visas may be applicable, but specific temporary visa assistance to trafficking victims is only offered to those who are willing and able to assist the criminal justice process by giving statements to police and possibly appearing as witnesses in a criminal prosecution. The few visas available are all discretionary and can't be applied for. They depend on the capacity of the woman to give evidence and its value, and the likelihood of a case proceeding to trial. Religious groups argue that the trafficking visa system perpetuates the trauma and disempowerment of trafficking victims, and they're advocating for a different approach. Louise Reeves.
Sometimes I just find that the system is so tightly legislated, there's not much room for flexibility. While the witness protection trafficking visas are a small step in the right direction, even those are geared to a very narrow focus. They are geared to the woman who can be of use to the criminal justice system. It doesn't have an approach that's equally of assistance to the women who will not be of use in a utilitarian sense to the criminal justice system. Our focus needs to be much broader. I would like to see a more rights-based focus that takes in the human dignity of the person and their rights, not only in terms of how useful are they to the system.
For those women who may agree to go through the criminal justice process and seek to be useful for prosecutions and court cases, how difficult is it for them to have to testify or to even give police statements about the kind of treatment they've received?
Look, I think that's a really valid question. I am sure for the average person to have to go to court is extremely stressful. How much more so for a person who doesn't understand the system, who may have limited language capacity, may have less education than the average Australian citizen, who is absolutely cowed and sometimes terrified that she may come face to face with her trafficker. She may be angry and depressed, all attached with having to go over and over the information. And in these cases, the women are obliged to relive what they have been through in minute detail. For some of them, I truly believe they experience post-traumatic stress syndrome, and there are all kinds of triggers in the process that can cause them significant distress.
We want to explore what is it that they need in order to become healed from their experience.
Christine Carolyn of the Good Shepherd Sisters in Melbourne.
I spent a beautiful day recently with a young woman who was trafficked into Australia when she was 14. She thought she was coming to look after Australian children. And in fact, when she came from the Sydney airport to the house of the trafficker and saw the toys on the floor, she thought, these are the children I'm going to mind. But in fact, she was moved straight to a brothel in Sydney and she was repeatedly raped until an immigration raid freed her from the brothel. Now, what happens to her once she's freed, and how can she gradually get herself back on her feet? And the same for Phuong Thong Simaply. When she was found by immigration, what was it that she needed? Now, for both of those young women, we believe they need so much human support. They need an opportunity to heal, and that has to happen in a way that, where there's a visa that gives those women legal status in Australia so they can get themselves back on their feet. So we're asking that as soon as that immigration raid finds them, that they have a visa that gives them an opportunity to heal. Because a crime, a great crime, has happened to those women in Australia. And so as Australians, we have a responsibility to compensate in some small way for that great crime.
And that clearly is to give them more time and more community support than is presently available under the limited visa regime.
That's right. And that counselling and that health support needs to happen where that woman feels most safe. Some women may want to go home right away, but some women can't go home. So if they can't go home or they can't go home right away, then they need to be able to heal here in Australia.
Christine Carolyn. A first step towards healing is trust. Margaret Ng is a nun, part of the Josephite Counter-Trafficking Project in Sydney. She works as a counsellor and pastoral care worker with trafficked women in Villawood Detention Centre. How easy has she found it to create trust?
Not easy. The fact that I've been going regularly on a weekly basis has been an asset, as it is referrals from the detainees who trust me. And one of them actually said, "How do I know you can be trusted? How do I know that you're not from the brothel owner?" I refer her on to the other detainees and also speak about my going there before they even arrived. And this helps to allay their fears. It's a good time, if there's time enough, to speak with them so that they can tell their story in a safe and non-judgmental environment. They have suffered abuse and deception, so it's not going to be easy. It takes a long while for anybody to really talk about how traumatized they have been. So it took somebody about 10 months to tell me that she was alcoholic. And that comes with the building of trust.
And I imagine because many of these women may not be in a detention centre for very long, you can't always get to the depths of their problems.
That's right. And they can detect when a person is sincerely there for them. So if we're talking about relieving suffering and bringing hope, at least it's good to be able to open to them the face of acceptance for who they are and not what they have done, and acceptance of their self-worth. I think that's the most important feature. A deeper understanding of who they are and that they are good, and that this will help them to survive whatever trauma has been part of their being trafficked.
Is it difficult for them to recover a sense of their own goodness in the face of the experiences that they've had?
It takes time for healing to take place. It can only take place if they can have a sense of self-worth and that they are inherently good.
Religious groups are key providers of support services to trafficked women. A safe house for victims of trafficking is about to open in Sydney, and one is proposed for Melbourne, both involving church agencies. This is Encounter on ABC Radio National. I'm David Bush, and we're exploring issues of human trafficking from the perspective of religious groups active in this issue in Australia. Right on Australia's doorstep, across Asia, human trafficking is rife between and within countries. There are many scenarios of how traffickers lure young adults or deceive families into handing over or selling their children. Ostensibly, it's for legitimate jobs in the city or over the border, but in reality, they're mostly headed for prostitution. Most never return home, being either too fearful, ashamed, sick with HIV, or having been abandoned by their families. Traffickers prey on the most vulnerable, and in the context of grinding poverty, poor education, rampant HIV and health problems, rural displacement, and corrupt local officials, there's an almost endless pool of easy recruits.
We're always going to have in humanity those who are greedy, those who are unjust, people who are corrupt and people who are wicked. That's part of the human matrix. It's part of the human fabric. But what is human-made that we can do something about is poverty.
Australian Julie Morgan is Asia-Pacific Program Coordinator with Franciscans International. She's currently setting up a new Franciscans International regional office in Bangkok, which will open in January 2008 with a major focus on trafficking prevention.
Once when I was in Cambodia working with Caritas Australia, the Catholic Overseas Aid and Development Agency, we had a group of people from Australia up to the northeast part of the country, up to Battambang. And there we met one Saturday morning a group of young girls who were living in a brothel. They were working as sex workers in this brothel, and they were participating in what we were calling a health education class. But it was one of those situations which just completely breaks your heart, because here we were meeting these 12 beautiful young women. The owner of the brothel told us very proudly that all of her girls were between 16 and 22 years of age, and we were meant to think, oh, that's great, isn't it? But as I sat between a couple of them, I realised that they were no more than about 12, and perhaps the oldest one was about 18. And you looked at their faces and you could see that a couple of them had bruises around the eyes, welts on the back of the neck, and you just knew what it was they were experiencing. And these poor little kids, most of them have been sold. Some of them have been sold by their parents because of the grinding poverty in which they live. That seems to be the only thing that they can do. For some, it's not the parents who sell them, but it's an older brother or it's an uncle. That was just a few years ago, and a 12-year-old girl was worth about $300 US. And if the child was younger, then the price went up. It's a phenomenon that is deeply rooted in poverty. And meeting these girls this particular day and asking them questions about their life, and then at one stage I said to them, would you like to ask us some questions about what life is like in Australia? But I could never have anticipated this question from this girl. She was perhaps the eldest of the group, and she looked at me, and I understood by her body language, because it was a very surly body language that she was using to talk to me, and she looked at me, and when the question was translated into English, the question was, what will you do to support us if we want to leave this work? And all the kids looked at her, and the brothel owner looked at her, and I thought, this is such a brave question. This kid is going to get belted at the end of all of this. But she was staring at me, and she was posing the question to me, what are you going to do to stop this? And I just couldn't think of anything to say. What I wanted to do was rescue all of them, take each one of them away. But if I had taken that 12 away, then there would have been another 12 the next day. And I was stuck in thinking about what it was I could possibly do to respond to this poor kid's situation. When one of my Cambodian staff members said, I'll answer that question for you. And she started to say to the girls, look, the problems in Cambodia are like this. They're huge. And we only have money to do this, this and this. She said, so we've only got two priorities at the moment. And the first priority is to help you with your health. And the girls started to nod and they understood what she was saying. And then she said this, and this was the most important lesson I ever learned in trying to understand trafficking and contemporary forms of slavery. She looked at the girls and she said, our second priority is to help your parents. It's to help them with their vegetable production and their rice production. Because then if they're not so poor... And she stopped. And she didn't have to finish the rest of the sentence, but every single one of those kids, from the eldest down to the youngest, nodded. Because they all knew that if their parents weren't so poor, the kids wouldn't have to be sold. So how do you tackle this problem? How do you tackle it? You don't tackle it by rescuing individual kids, although that's necessary too. But you have to tackle it by getting to the heart of poverty. People don't want to sell their kids. But it's a situation that is so horrendous for people. And that's where I think, for us in Australia, where we can participate meaningfully in campaigns like the Millennium Development Goals, which are trying to eradicate the worst and the extreme forms of poverty, it's only when we start to do that, it's only when we start to get involved in understanding the depth of the problem that we can begin to understand, aha, this is where some of the solutions lie.
We definitely believe that a key driver of making women and children susceptible to being trafficked is poverty.
Louise Cleary of the Brigidine Order.
And through our networks, through, say, Caritas International in Nepal or in the Philippines or Thailand or Cambodia, through those networks we've been able to see that poverty, some cultural factors in a lack of value being placed on the girl child, has led young women to be trafficked. So we fundamentally believe that there is a need for the world community to give much greater attention to the Millennium Development Goals. When you see small projects make a huge difference in alternative income generation in Cambodia, Nepal, we see that it's made a huge difference to a community's lives. So addressing those areas, particularly in poverty reduction, as one of the Millennium Goals, and in the education of women and girls.
There's lots of trafficking going on in the past in our villages, and it's ongoing because it's impossible to know from a day-to-day basis. So what we're identifying is young people that in these vulnerable families that are the young people that these recruiters identify.
Liz Hoban is an Australian academic and community development worker, and she's worked closely with religious agencies in Melbourne on anti-trafficking research and activism. Liz is speaking to us from rural Cambodia, where she's developing a range of micro-social enterprises for income generation. These range from sewing and embroidery workshops to a flower farm, all designed specifically to counter the lure of job prospects touted by traffickers.
For example, last week there's one family who's the young woman there is 17 and her mother died of AIDS 3 years ago. Her father is ill at the moment with AIDS and will die within a 12-month period. There's five of them and she's the oldest. She's been doing daily labour up on the border and working on a road construction. So this daily labour of earning about $1.50 to $2 a day. So I said to her last week, because I was thinking we would expand the sewing project and I was, you know, trying to see what families with young people would be interested. And I asked her, what's she going to do in the future? And she said, oh, someone had already come to the village and asked her to come to Thailand with them, that they'll come back next week and tell her more about the information and they'll organise the day that she's to meet the taxi out on the road that she's going to Thailand, and I asked what she'd be doing in Thailand. She didn't really know. She said lots of other people in the village go into Thailand, and she thought she'd be working on the construction industry, which is just over the border in a new developing area on the other side of the Thai-Cambodia border. And I said to her, do you want to go? And she said, no, I don't want to go because my father is ill and my mother's dead and I'm in charge of this family. So that's exactly the story, you know. It's so innocent like that. This young girl has no education, so she's ripe for the picking for these recruiters. So now she has joined our project. She's joined more than 2 weeks, 10 days ago now, and she's loving it. She's booming. We're teaching all sorts of sewing skills, the measuring, the cutting out, everything. So when she finishes working with us, if she ever chooses to, she can have her own business. And we have a savings scheme, so she will be an independent young woman, and she's safe, really. She's very safe. She won't be lost across the Thai border. She'll stay in her village with her family, and by joining our project, she continues to be very much a part of that community and that family. We're building up community capital. When many young people cross the border, the community fractures. Young people are lost from the community. They're no longer marriageable partners for other young men, for example. The old people have no one to care for them. Young children don't have older brothers and sisters to help care for them. The community becomes quite fractured and fluid. So by helping young people to stay in the villages where we work, we are building up the social capital of the community. We're keeping families together. And I feel we're making a big inroad, because not just are we providing people with work, integrated into our work is awareness raising. So we are also talking about anti-trafficking. So we have information and education in all our economic projects about anti-trafficking, about their rights as workers. So I think we're having a significant impact.
Liz Hoban in rural Cambodia. Religious orders also operate grassroots job creation projects across Asia, directly supported by their Australian counterparts. Christine Carolyn of the Good Shepherd Sisters.
We have a network of fair trade outlets called the Trading Circle here in Australia, and it's part of an international network. Those fair trade outlets are particularly pitched at providing a place where women can sell their craft goods. I visited a part of this network in northeast Thailand, in Nong Khai, and I was just blown away by all of these people, mostly women, working on producing beautiful crafts. And that means that those people have a secure employment, they have a wage with dignity. And it means that they're not susceptible to being lured into the hands of human traffickers. And the craft is beautiful. And when you get an item from that trading circle, it comes with a little blessing that says that you, the person who buys that product, are blessed by the woman who has made that product for you.
It's probably a sobering thought to think that the woman who made it may have been trafficked and in some back brothel somewhere around the world if that industry in her village hadn't been started.
Yes, that's right. And also, it may be that that woman was trafficked and came back to her village HIV positive, which is very common in that part of northeast Thailand.
Religious orders have a unique network of congregations and members in grassroots communities across the Asia-Pacific region. A key aspect of the work of ACRATH, Australian Catholic Religious Against Trafficking in Humans, is to develop networks that can directly support trafficking victims and coordinate anti-trafficking initiatives across borders. ACRATH coordinator Pauline Cole.
And recently I was in Cebu with the Sisters of the Good Shepherd. I went as part of a four-woman delegation from Australia, where we connected with Sisters of the Good Shepherd and their partners in ministry from 14 Asian countries. We got to know each other. We got to understand what some of the circumstances in which they operate are in the different countries, how hard it is for some of them. We saw some of the recovery projects that are happening in Cebu. And we've set up this network so that if there is any way we can help each other, we have a network into which we can tap immediately. I think we have power in that. And once you have someone, if you know of a woman who needs help, or if they know of someone, they can email us and say, look, this is happening. Have you got something in Australia that will help this person? And I think that's part of the gift of a group like this.
ACRATH is also part of global religious agencies, such as Unanima International, a coalition of Catholic religious orders with representation at the United Nations and a strong focus on trafficking.
Today I'm going to talk to you about trafficking in human beings. So it's about buying and selling and using them as commodities. You all know what a commodity is?
Back in Australia, ACRATH sees it has a key role in creating public awareness about trafficking. Pauline Coll is in demand to speak at parishes and schools.
Now, we're going to begin with some TV clips that were made by the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime. And they were made to be broadcast through European TV channels.
Part of the answer of this is awareness in the Australian community, letting people know that the people potentially they're sort of picking up off the streets, being involved with in a sexual encounter, may well be trafficked people.
The Salvation Army's commander, Paul Moulds.
You may be aware of a case in a Riley Street brothel in Surry Hills where a client visiting a prostitute was so concerned by the state of this girl that he had been matched up with, and she was able to share with him during that encounter some of the situation that she was in and the fact that she was being held there against her will, and you know the fact that she was being made to pay off a large debt from being brought to Australia. And he was so morally outraged by that he actually made an anonymous call to the immigration department, and they did a raid on the brothel and found this girl, and she's one of the girls that we have had some contact with. So we need to be attacking this issue at so many different levels.
But what about the issue of prostitution? How do religious groups combating trafficking avoid this larger, more complex issue? Brigidine leader Louise Cleary.
It's certainly a dilemma for us, and we've taken a position that our focus is on the human being who's caught in this web of trafficking and on their human rights. So we've strongly taken that as our stance. We really are looking at those who are trapped or have been coerced into sexual servitude and may seek our assistance. We are not going to stand in any moral judgment about where it's come from or who's doing it. Some studies would indicate that many women in prostitution did not choose it, but in that work, because it's one of the viable options, or maybe the only viable option to survive for them. But as Catholic sisters, we're not going to moralise and stand in judgment. The congregations who are working in this area are really doing it because we're fully committed to the development of the human person and believe that any exploitation is a serious violation of their rights.
And in terms of the involvement of men, the demand side, if you like, of prostitution and therefore of trafficking, how do you address that? Because that is also something of a moral issue.
Yes, it is. And that's something that we, not ACRATH, but Unanima International, are really working on mounting a Stop the Demand campaign from the human rights perspective. Because, as you would probably know, the research from the Special Rapporteur on Trafficking, Sigma Huda, has brought out some clear links between prostitution and trafficking, and we would know that that's true. And it is an educative thing that we would see in our Australian context to address the demand and use any avenues we have to make any men aware that some of the women will not be there of their own free will, and they are complicit in abusing their rights. So it is a very sensitive area that we're struggling to work out a way to address, but we do intend to do so.
Supported by Catholic Religious Australia, the peak national body of the leaders of religious congregations, ACRATH has become a key anti-trafficking lobby group in the political sphere. After the Australian government ratified the UN Protocol on Combating Trafficking in 2005, ACRATH submitted a report to a United Nations committee critiquing the government's policies and performance. Aspects of their report were picked up in the committee's findings, and this formed the basis of a follow-up campaign of intensive lobbying by ACRATH in Canberra.
There are whole groups of people and networks working across Australia in dealing with anti-trafficking. The religious networks are unique and have made an incredible contribution to the anti-trafficking movement in Australia. And they have in many ways led the development of law reform and debate in this area.
Jennifer Byrne directs the Anti-Slavery Project at the University of Technology, Sydney, where she's a senior lecturer in law.
Working in anti-trafficking, anti-slavery work is incredibly difficult. It's draining, it's complicated, and there have been very few positive outcomes. One of the enormous benefits that I've found from working with religious communities is that they come to the area with a different framework. They have a theology and a commitment that might have a different motivation from the one that I'm working from. One of the things that they do is to think about process. And so if they've asked me perhaps to go and talk about trafficking, it's not just going into a room, opening my mouth and talking. What they will do is to have some period of reflection that's built into that discussion. And frequently what happens is that they will do something like perhaps draw everybody's attention to a moment of silence where people are called to reflect on the situation of a woman or a man or a child who might be trafficked right now. And, you know, that process really is very distressing, of course, because it does bring to your mind the reality and the horror of the work that we're doing. But it also, on the other hand, is very encouraging and really has helped to keep us all, you know, involved and focused in the importance of the work.
In Brisbane, seven retired nuns have met monthly for more than a year to pray about trafficking and support church anti-trafficking work.
Creator God, we believe that the human person is the clearest reflection of your presence in the world. All of our prayer and work against human trafficking is designed to protect and promote the dignity of every person as an expression of your creative work and the meaning of Christ's redemptive mystery.
Nola Leamy is the coordinator.
We're Missionary Franciscan Sisters of the Immaculate Conception. We live here at Delamore, which is our main house in Australia. Most of us have been in missions overseas, in the outback with the Aboriginal people, in Papua New Guinea. We've all worked in the missions all our lives, so we're particularly interested in the fact that women and children are being trafficked. So trafficking of women and children touches us deeply.
Oh, Brother Jesus, as a child you were carried into exile. Remember all those trafficked persons who are deprived of their home or country, who groan under the burden of anguish and sorrow, enduring all forms of indignity, living daily with physical abuse and hunger, lacking family support and in fear.
Lord, hear our prayer.
Most of the sisters who belong have little satellite groups as well. They have people they send material to. Some have people they pray with. Cecilia has a snooker group of men that she's involved in this too. It's interesting and it's spread.
For a long time, particularly after my many visits to Cambodia, I used to lie awake at night and think, what was the second last thing that you sold before you sold your daughter? You know, what is it that you keep? Do you keep one last pot so that when you've got some money that's been brought in from the sale of a child, you can then buy food and cook for the other children? You do lie awake and think about those things. But I used to visit Villawood for a long time, and I used to lie awake at night and think, what is it that's happening in the Australian community that we're prepared to see this happening to other human beings? How we can close the curtains of our mind to that is extraordinary. We have to keep asking ourselves the question, as our level of comfort grows up, is that making us less compassionate? You know, one of the stories I often talk to people about is the old fairy tale of the princess and the pea. Remember that one? Where the princess has all these mattresses that separate her from the little pea underneath, but her sleep is still disturbed. And I wonder if we've put so many mattresses, if we've put so many layers of comfort between ourselves and the reality of injustice, that we're trying to get to sleep, and yet we shouldn't be. And this should be part of the role of religion.
Julie Morgan of Franciscans International. Here's Christine Carolyn and Louise Cleary.
I had a beautiful conversation with a young girl who was 15, and I felt so moved by her strength. Fury too, that people are making so much money out of such an evil industry, and that those people are so powerful, and that governments are not prepared to name the ugliness. I think it is possible to shut down human trafficking, particularly in Australia where our borders are so much more controlled, but we have to have the political will to address ourselves energetically to the rights of people on the margins.
The other thing that I've learned is the incredible resilience of the human spirit and the amazing adaptability of people of being able to get back on track for some of them and get their lives together or even be able to survive in such circumstances. I'm full of admiration for their strength and I'm inspired by it, really. When you see youngsters learning new skills and that actually coming out of years of being exploited, that is an amazing gift.
Because we walk this journey with them sometimes for months and months, I get a deep, deep sense of the build-up of trust. I think we are privy to an enormous amount of trust from these women, and it just impels us, I think, to do our very best for them in whatever way possible.
Immigration lawyer and sister of St Joseph, Louise Reeves.
When I see a woman before me who is deeply depressed, really angry, and bearing the brunt of the suffering while the traffickers are out there making thousands and thousands of dollars and seem to just get away with it, I'd have to say sometimes I feel very angry myself. I try and devote or use that energy in a positive way to assist the women as much as possible. We do our very, very best to keep hope alive for them. They have to know that they have dignity, that they are worth this effort and that they have rights too. It may not have been their experience up till that point that they've been treated with a whole lot of human dignity.
You kindle the fire, never dies always.
This encounter's called The Light at the Door. My thanks to all who took part, and also to Nudgee College, Kerry Clump of ABC Archives, and Dee McLaughlin, writer and director of The Jammed. The 2007 federal budget included a funding package of $26 million over 4 years on anti-trafficking, mostly directed at criminal justice. Tenders have just closed for provision of government-funded support services to victims. Women religious from 30 countries, including Australia, will attend a global training forum on anti-trafficking in Rome in October. On our website today, you'll find a full list of links to relevant sites, and a transcript of this program will be published there in a few days. Visit abc.net.au/religion and click on Encounter. Technical production today by Jim Usher. I'm David Bush.
Within our darkest night, you kindle a fire that never dies away, that never dies away.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.